coming up anyway.
This episode of Storytime Podcast is brought to you
up.
By
He's doing his thing.
Warby Parker. For more information,
nope.
For more coupons,
nope. To get your 5-day free home try-on,
please visit Warby Parker at
nope. Warby Parker Trial.
WarbyParkerTrial.com
slash paranormal. Welcome to the Storytime Podcast with Brent and Dave.
Steve.
Hey, Steve, you're here. You're back. People have been emailing us like crazy. What have they been saying, Dave?
They've been saying, yeah, I used to listen.
And then we reply back, why'd you stop? And they reply back,
because Steve 3PO is no longer on mute.
So, Steve, tell the people what gives and where are you and how are you?
Where the heck is our news?
You know, here's the funny thing, guys. You know, I was just out doing my thing for a while, trying to really just find what I'm trying to do. And I think I finally found it, and I'm ready to bring it back to the show just to really contribute in a way that I couldn't do before.
Can you give us a preview?
Yeah. I'm just really here now.
Yeah, no, but what are you
doing differently? What are you offering to the table now?
Yeah, what are you doing differently that's going to contribute to the actual show?
You know, I think it's just the way that I've started to go about thinking about things. Well, let me actually think while we're doing the show in a way that might ask the hard-hitting questions.
So you never thought before?
Not hard-hitting.
What was it before?
You know, there's a way where you can ask questions where they're kind of soft, and I'm not about that life anymore. I think we need to start asking what's really going to tell the people what's up nowadays.
Steve, are you trying to pull a fast one on the guys who do ask the hard questions? You can't have your answer be what we do.
Are you trying to say that it's you not, listen back and it's not,
it's
oh, we're not all that?
So now, like
so now
that.
You're saying that your thing is to ask the hard questions, but that's what me and Brandon doing, so we're not
going to
do that.
What I'm trying to say is I used to be Wolf Blitzer status. I'm Christiana, yeah, what did he say? Christiana Yamanapur.
The ice skater?
The ice skater?
Chris Yamaguchi?
No, that's Chris Yamaguchi. I'm Christiana Yamapur.
Who is that?
That's the one that Rory Gilmore wants to be in the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gilmore Girls.
Yep, that's why I didn't
if
get it
you
at all.
On the run, living lonely, and so cold.
Well, so cold.
And we're excited.
Not impressed with Steve's answer, but let's move on.
Well, maybe it's like, you know how you watch the debates and they say, what are you going to do about the taxes? And they say, before I answer that question,
hey, when he's done doing yoga, can I contribute?
It was kind of like that to where he heard our question and said, nope. Not going to talk about that.
I didn't have a really good answer, to be honest.
So where were you?
Where was I?
Yes.
You know, I was...
Answer the email. Answer John's email.
What was John's email?
Which one do you want to do? Steve's
email?
John's email.
Oh, John's email. He said...
C-3PO, I think.
He said, not going to listen anymore.
Yeah.
John...
And why not because of Steve?
John, I'm glad you asked
that. It's time for Letters with Steve.
Like the letter? What do you mean the letter?
You're writing back to him.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, two. One, two, three, four.
Dear John, not the book. I just want to say, first of all, I'm sorry if I hurt you anyway for my absence. Usually, I'm a really dependable guy, like the diapers. This is what I want to say to you, John. If you listen to me, I will continue to talk to you. I will ask the hard-hitting questions you want to hear, and I will be the reporter that you have always wanted to hear on a podcast. John, this is for you.
Letters with Steve. Steve, you essentially said the same thing you did a while ago.
I don't know what you guys want from me.
I want you to give an actual answer.
Give me an example.
The answer to the question is you just gave up on the show. That's the answer to the question. We asked you to do it and you said no. Sorry, thanks, but no thanks.
They don't want to hear that.
You said thanks, but no thanks. I know, but I'm going to tell you. You're not afraid to get the hard-hitting questions,
right.
But you're afraid to get the hard-hitting answers.
I never said that was not true, though. You guys see, these are the hard-hitting questions.
It's not that you didn't say that it's not true, it's that you didn't say it.
For the people here listening today, this is the kind of reporting that you do want to hear from Dave and Bran. And aren't you glad that you finally heard it?
Guys, this is the Starry Time podcast. Every day you listen to the Starry Time news with Bran and Dave. We talk about the paranormal news every single morning. But on Wednesdays, we like to go back to the good old days where we just did interviews. And today is no difference. Man, it's going to be a good one. We're talking Flat Earth. We're talking the Truman Show. We're talking.
And we're going to get answers.
Absolutely. We are also excited about some good friends of ours. I don't know where I was going with it.
What?
I am in New York. We're all in the same room together is one thing.
Yeah, that's one thing.
Here's the want to make our good friends.
Well, I think where Brandon was going with that we have friends is he was saying we like to thank all the friends that support the podcast. Friends of the show. And,
that was the crowd's
we have the best friends.
We do have the best friends.
And you guys are our friends, and here are a few things you can do to help us out as friends. One, review the show.
Yeah.
What?
Are we doing the ad now?
No. Okay. We're not talking about Warby Parker yet.
Number two, warbyparker.com.
Not yet. One thing you guys can do to help us out as your friends is to leave us a review on the iTunes. The more reviews we have, the better it is for us in the long run.
It was warbyparkerpromotions.com.
Nope, not yet. We're not there yet.
/ paranormal.
And hey, we can't do it. I just want to say to anyone that just listens because they care about us, thank you.
Yeah. And while we're there, so you can leave us a review. You could also, what was the next one? Subscribe. You can subscribe.
What's the next
one? Starrytime.weebly.com. You click on the subscribe button. That will allow you to download every single episode that we do. We do an episode every day, okay? Episode every day.
Hashtag.
Wait. Let's back up a little bit.
Hashtag.
Monday we do an episode.
Tuesday?
Also an episode.
But not Wednesday.
No, Wednesday we do an
episode. You do an episode on Wednesday?
And there's an interview. It's today.
Hashtag.com/ paranormal activity.
No. Wait, Thursday we're doing an episode?
Yes.
Okay, then definitely Friday off though, right?
Friday we keep going.
We're committed?
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday though we keep it holy.
Hashtag.com. Okay.
So we keep the Sabbaths.
We double Sabbath.
Yeah.
We can't decide.
We Sabbath so much they call us Black Sabbath.
Why are you here?
I don't know. You guys asked me to be here.
Yeah, but it's good. That
Dear John, this is for you.
Yeah.
Remember the Sabbath.
So you can subscribe to us and you'll get breaking paranormal news every single day and also an interview every Wednesday. So that's what you listen to right now. And then the last way you can help us out is when you hear us talk about our good friends that decide to let us talk about their products on the air, help them out by doing the free trials. And those free trials allow us to continue to push out this content.
Hey, what are those promotions?
We're not there yet.
Mm-hmm. Question though.
Yeah.
Steve, are you excited to talk to somebody that has a little bit of a worldview that you're not one that you have?
You mean a literal worldview that I don't share?
So,
oh, I get it because it's Flat Earth.
So,
worldview because he doesn't think that the world views. I view the world as round. He views it as square. Am I on the right page here?
Flat.
So more like flat. You don't mean literally, you mean lateral.
When he says flat, does he mean...
You can ask that question.
These are the hard-hitting questions I'm going to get to the bottom of.
Steve, let's pipe down for now.
Sorry, everybody.
Brandon.
Yeah.
Are you excited to talk to a guy that thinks the world's flat?
I'm very excited about it. This has been a topic that has been in the news a lot lately with B.O.B. and with what's the scientist's name?
Oh, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Neil deGrasse.
They've really been... Ellen DeGeneres Tyson has been talking about this a lot.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Wait, does Neil deGrasse Tyson really think it's a...
No, he's been pushing back against B.O.B.
Oh, okay, good.
Does one of the world's leading astrophysicists believe the world is flat?
That's why I got concerned.
So it's been in the news a lot recently, and then I found this guy who not only believes the Earth is flat, but also that we live in an enclosed world similar to the Truman Show. So I have a lot of questions, and I hope that we get a lot of answers. But before that, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back here on...
One more, Brando. Oh. There's been some hype with you and certain figures of history.
Churchill?
Who's your favorite president?
Churchill.
Okay, president. President's Churchill. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors here on the Start Time.
Can I say Theodore Roosevelt?
Hey, Steve.
Yeah, Brant.
I see you're wearing some glasses.
Yeah.
Where'd you get those glasses from? They're real nice.
Particularly enough, I got them from Warby Parker, actually.
Did you hear about that, Dave? He got them from Warby Parker.
Yeah.
I've been trying to tell Dave here for the last week that he needs to get a new pair of glasses because those bad boys aren't doing it for him.
Dave, okay. Let me tell you, these are the most quality glasses I've ever had.
Prove it.
Not breaking.
Yeah.
Okay, let me try them on.
They're trying them on.
Okay. Tell me how it feels.
Yeah.
I mean, the prescription might not be right.
There you guys are!
Hey, Dave.
I've been walking around like a blind bat.
I gotta say, you're wearing the glasses right now, and you look a million times better.
Do I now?
Yeah. I just found out today, you have a girlfriend, and she told me that she really would like you to get some Warby Parker glasses. Steve has Warby Parker glasses. My wife has Warby Parker glasses. So my question to the listeners is, why don't you have Warby Parker glasses? They are the coolest glasses in the land.
Those actually do look pretty good on you.
I know.
I'm not even kidding right now.
There's something about Warby Parker glasses. And my wife texted me and she said, you know what? I love Warby Parker so much, I'm giving the sunglasses a trial. They have sunglasses. So maybe you don't need new glasses. Maybe you just want to try the sunglasses. Here's the thing. We have an exclusive deal for you guys that are listening to the Star Time podcast. It is a 5-day home free try-on for their glasses or their sunglasses. 5-day home free trials. That's 5 pairs of glasses for 5 days to go around your workplace, put on the new glasses. Steve, you did the 5-day free home try-on.
Yeah,
How was it?
It was absolutely great. I got to try them on. My mom insulted me a few times. I got a few compliments, yep. Which then led me to my final decision on the Theos. Check them out. Great pair.
So here's what you guys need to do. You need to go to www.warbyparkertrial.com/paranormal and click on the 5-day home free try-on. That's www.warbyparker.com/paranormal for your free 5-day home free today.
That's how you do it.
Warby Parker.
And welcome back to the Star Time podcast with Bran, Steve, Dave. It is an honor to weekly talk to you guys about the paranormal. And this is a first for us, Steve. This is a first. And Dave.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a first for us. We're talking about a little something different today. It's called the flat Earth theory, more or less. And here's the question. Are we inside of a Truman Show-like world? Only thousands of miles wide. And this is what we're going to be talking about today with our guest, Mark Sargent. He grew up in South Whibney Island, Washington. And Mark started his career playing computer games professionally. And from there, he spent the next 20 years training people in awesome software. And in 2014... He looked into what was no doubt the most ridiculous conspiracy ever, called the Flat Earth Theory, and through extensive research discovered that it wasn't so laughable after all. And early in 2015, he released a series of YouTube videos called the Flat Earth Clues, which delve into the possibility of the Flat Earth in a Truman Show-like enclosed system. And that's what we're talking about today. Mark, welcome to the Starry Time.
Hey, guys. Thanks very much for having me.
Absolutely. Did I say your last name correctly?
Sargent? Yeah.
Sargent. There's a lot of jokes you could do.
Yeah, I've heard those jokes since I was probably in second grade.
Absolutely. I'm sure you have. Hey, let's just before we go any further, Flat Earth, what is it?
It's crazy. It's ludicrous, ridiculous, insane, and it shouldn't be anything you guys are talking about, but yet... here we are. It is literally that you are not living on a globe, that you are living in a Truman Show enclosed structure thousands of miles wide. You're living underneath a firmament if you're into biblical things.
Uh-huh.
That everything you know about space, everything from the planets, the sun, the moon, the galaxies has all been built on really bad science, and most of it has been a deliberate fabrication but if you want to, you know, boil it down real quick for you, it is that the government's what if, I'll put it, because I've been trying to come up with different ways because I know this upsets people. So in fact, let me start with that. Anyone who's listening to this now, there is a chance this is going to upset you because it is a world changer, literally. Mm-hmm. Nobody likes to feel like they've been tricked. Nobody likes to feel like they've been lied to.
Yeah.
And so what we've been kind of proposing here is that, let's say we all know, you know, Copernicus came out 500 years ago and said, yeah, oh yeah, the Earth is round and there's all sorts of wonderful math and science, and says, oh yeah, it's obviously, I'm sorry, not round, a sphere, a ball,
okay,
a globe. If that's the case, then eventually you're going to have to prove it visually.
Yep.
And so, okay, you know, unfortunately 500 years ago, you didn't have anything. So, you know, in the 1700s, you had balloons that could go up at least high enough to carry a person. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the early 1900s, you get the internal combustion engine and some planes. And then you don't even get rocket travel until 1957. Mm-hmm. So the question is this. If you got high enough to take a picture of the Earth in 1957 and you were wrong, would you tell people? And I use the simple answer to that question is Raiders of the Lost Ark scenario, which is – and everyone remembers that Raiders of the Lost Ark from 30 years ago, or say 1981, I should say, where everyone was fighting over the Ark, you know, the Ark of the Covenant. You know, the Germans, the Americans, the British, everybody was trying, you know, they're killing each other over this thing. But what was more interesting to me was the very end of that movie. What happens in the last 60 seconds? The Americans get it. They put it in a box. They put it in a warehouse. And they never show anyone ever again. Why? Because it is an artifact that science can't explain. And if science can't explain it, they don't want it around. Plain and simple. They do not want proof of, you know, science and religion that has been a division, because that's really what we're talking about, mm-hmm, here. A huge division for a very, very long time. And what if somebody found the edge of the world, you know, proof of the firmament, proof of something that all religious texts have gone into for a long time? Would science tell anybody? No, of course they wouldn't. Because once they did, it would be a massive paradigm shift, a shift in power in all aspects, economic, religious, academic. And so they decided to keep it a secret for, you know, the better part of 60 years. Okay. There you go. That's my short version.
Okay, so that was kind of like the things that you were thinking about that made you start investigating this in the first place?
Yes.
Okay. And then what made you think like that that they would be doing that? Okay, like you said, it's for power and stuff, but how are they able to control everything within this? Like, let's say that we are, like, it's within a dome, just for example, yeah, inside of,
yeah,
a dome.
Yeah, yeah.
How are they able to make it seem like to the physics of everything works out to where they're able to predict things? And then is that just, you think, a way for them to have powers, the ability to, like, say that they have it all figured out with science and such?
Yeah. They didn't have to control everything that was in here. All they have – you want to talk about the luckiest people ever, and that is the powers that be. Want to call them – I usually group into something called the authority, and that is the super rich, the governments, and the royals. You know, people that control the politicians, basically. And they, when you stumbled across this, I mean, the system was already built for us, you know, by, you want to call it the divine, you want to say the God subcontracted out the work, and it was built by an advanced civilization. Take your pick. It's going to be one of those two. But all they had to do was keep the lie going. And that was just money. That's all that took. So you see, and some creative policies. So, for example, when they seal off, and I know I'm going to be jumping around a lot because it's tough to do in an hour or even an hour and a half. But when you seal the two big things that just screamed at me, because I was looking at this, and remember, everybody that starts out in the flat Earth world, they try to debunk it. Nobody jumps on the flat Earth bandwagon right away. Mm-hmm, right. Everybody says this is just the stupidest thing ever. I tried to shut it down for months. Could not do it until finally I said, you know what? Maybe I'm going about this the wrong way. If I actually found out about this place and I was trying to hide the world from the civilization I lived in, how would I do it exactly? And the first two things I would do would be I would make sure the boundaries were completely secured, that nobody could get to them. And coincidentally enough, the Antarctic Treaty, which was put in place in 1959, which says no corporation can ever go down to Antarctica and do work ever, That was a big one. And the Van Allen radiation belts were announced in 1959, which says, oh, yeah, by the way, if you go up real high, there'll be radiation and it'll kill you. And, you know, that discourages the private space program, which deterred, you know, all the major players like Lockheed Martin and Boeing and General Dynamics for years and years. But the Antarctic Treaty was so glaring. For example, let's say you're the president of ExxonMobil. And, you know, you have unlimited financial resources at your disposal. And Admiral Byrd, you know, goes down in 1954, says on television that there's oil down there and there's coal and minerals. You're telling me you can't go down there? In fact, you not only can you not go down there, you're not even allowed to talk about it. You're head of ExxonMobil. You could, you know, give the New York Times, the Washington Post, you give them, throw them a briefcase of money every week and say, run a story and tell America how great it would be for us to go down there. They're not even allowed to lobby. And, you know, not to mention it's the only piece of real estate anywhere that nobody owns. That and, you know, sealing – again, NASA being created in 1958, it just screams structure. And that is you're sealing off – it's exactly what I would do, which is you seal off the outer edge and the upper edge at the same time. It was brilliant in that aspect, but they were limited in their special effects technology. What could you fake? And how long could you fake it? And I will give them credit that because people are going to say, well, don't you believe went to the moon? I'm going, no, I'm way worse than what you think there. I'm saying that the entire reason NASA was created was to keep this thing a secret. That you went – because it just bugged me for the longest time, for like 10 years. Why would you fake – the Americans anyway. Why would you fake going to the moon?
Uh-huh.
And it's like, well, this changed that. It didn't. It changed it from a question to a statement. And that was, it's not that they wanted to fake the moon missions. You had to. If you don't fake it, eventually the private sector is going to get involved. So you've got to get up there. You've got to at least fake a picture. We'll throw in. I'm sorry, I'm rambling here, but feel free to jump in anytime.
Yeah.
Which is the picture thing was a huge giveaway for me, which was. Everyone remembers the picture taken in 1972 from Apollo 17, you know, coming back and shows the bottom part of Africa and all of Antarctica. Why was that the only picture taken, from 1972 all the way until July of last year, 2015? And why did you wait from Apollo, 8, 9, 10, or I'm sorry, 9 didn't go, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, all these supposedly round trips to the Van Allen belt, which, by the way, you never did explain how you got through the radiation without shielding, even though we all know the only ways you can shield from radiation, there's only two metals that do any damn good, and that's lead and gold. Nobody says what they used or if they used anything. Anyway, that's where – yeah, everywhere I turned, everywhere I looked to try to debunk this thing, I thought I would find a mountain of evidence in the globe's favor and say, just shut this thing down. I did not want it to be flat. I never wanted it to be flat.
Yeah.
But the more I looked, the more it ended up – I just started banging my head on the keyboard to the point where I was like going, I can't actually prove it's a globe.
And yeah, can I ask you a question that maybe I think a lot of listeners would have too?
Go ahead.
This is Steve talking, by the way. First of all, I just want to say I'm really admire the fact that you take such a strong stance on something that a lot of people push against. So that's just good to start with.
Thanks.
But I do wonder this. I've been in a plane before, as I'm sure maybe a lot of our listeners have.
I was on a plane this morning.
And I feel like I do see, even with my own eyes, a little bit of a natural curve to the Earth when I get high enough, especially when I live in an ocean area. I think that you can kind of see a little bit of a curve.
Yep.
And I've also been on pretty long flights. We'll just say I've flown to Egypt before, and about a 15-hour flight.
Yep.
And so are you saying that maybe the Earth – or not the Earth, but the region that we're entrapped in is big enough to even fool pilots to think that they're going within a certain amount of area? Or do pilots know that they're encircling themselves – to kill time? And if so,
no. Pilots don't know anything.
Okay.
And to your question, there's two ways to answer this.
Okay.
Which is the first is when it comes to the when you say you go up there,
mm-hmm.
and you see a curve. I put out this because the Flat Earth Clues, which I did, which were about a year ago. I put something to the internet and I said, okay, because I get that a lot.
Yeah.
People say, oh, yeah, I was up in an airplane. I saw the curve. I go, did you or did you just want to see the curve? Because all you have to do now, because everybody's got cameras, take a picture of it when you get a chance. Put it on whatever laptop or the biggest display you can find. Mm-hmm. Hold a straight edge up to it and tell me the curve's still there.
But the pictures are different than what you see. Like,
well, are they? I mean, you know, if eventually you're going to run into somebody. I'm saying that nobody has come for. But let me answer the second.
Sorry, part. Go ahead.
It's okay because I've had a whole bunch of people, subject matter experts, which have come on my my little show. And they've all – I haven't had to solicit a single one of them. They've all come forward, and I've had two guys especially which I was interested in. One was a flight instructor out of Iowa, owns his own flight instruction company, and he was very open about it and you know, wasn't anonymous at all. And another guy was a retired United States Air Force navigator who specialized in refueling over long, long distances with other planes. And they both told me the same thing. This answer goes to why wouldn't pilots run into it? Mm-hmm. And they both said, because pilots are just way too busy. They'd never notice it. And they kind of went off one of my clues, which was even if a pilot, after all his checklists and went through all these different things, even if a pilot suspected something was wrong, do you really think that anything on their list of the top 50 reasons why they think something is wrong, that any of them is going to be like, well, the map's obviously wrong because the Earth has got to be flat. They're never going to make that leap of faith. And even again, there's even another barrier. That is, even if they did make that leap of faith, who are they going to tell? They're going to go to the company they work for. They're going to go to the FAA, which is why I joked in one of the clues. I said, you would be better off as a pilot saying that you were chased by a UFO for 2 hours. Because you are going to be grounded immediately. You're going to be put on a desk job, and then they're going to forget about you as quickly as they can. So no, pilots are definitely not in on it. In fact, there's almost nobody is in on this, which is why it has been hidden so extremely well, is because nobody – why would you ever see it? Let me throw one more at you, because I ran to a scientist about, 6 weeks ago, and I asked him on air – we were in this debate, and this was in the heated part of the debate. This was a different guy. And I said, okay, let's say you're a scientist and you want to grab the average person on the street and you want to convince them that they're on a curve. How would you do it? And I thought he would knee-jerk react on this one and say, well, you know, I'd show him boats on the horizon, or I'd take him up in a plane. And he goes, you know what? I couldn't do it from the ground. He goes, in fact, I couldn't even do it from a plane. The only thing I could do is give the guy $20 million and hopefully I can get him on some private space program and get him up high enough. And that's the reason why nobody's gotten this, because it's so well hidden that we assume so many things that we've just nobody's ever caught it. Why would anyone think about it? The conditioning, where again, it seems so simple, but it's so thorough, which is because the question I put to people, I say, how do you know it's a globe? How do you know, each of you three guys there, how do you know it's a globe? It's not like water is wet, fire burns, you drop your pen and it falls to the ground. That may or may not be gravity. How do you know it's a globe? Is it because you saw a globe model since you were 6 years old and you went through high school and maybe college and maybe your PhD, and the globe was always there in the back of your classroom? Or is it because you saw a picture in a textbook? Because nobody owns their own spaceship. And it's like, well, you know, NASA told us. But let me throw one more out. And that is, it's a decent argument. But George Orwell, who wrote 1984, he actually wrote about this in 1946. And he said, he wrote an article just about how people believe things. And he goes, it's really strange. He goes, you could ask anybody on the street how they know the Earth is a globe. And they'll say, well, everybody knows it's a globe. And then if you press it, they get angry. But that shouldn't have been possible back in 1946. We didn't even have jet planes in 1946. So how did everybody know it was a globe? It was because they were told and they believed it. So anyway, sorry. That's my...
No problem. I'm going to follow the same vein of kind of the last question. But first, I'm going to do one. We actually, all three of us, grew up... we live in Cape Canaveral, and so we've seen a lot of like rocket launches and heard the sound barrier break and everything.
Sure.
So if these things go up, is the ceiling that we're seeing? I want to kind of just get your kind of description of
of what it is that we're inside of. Is it like, you're just going to use the Truman Show since that's kind of like a very standard basis or model for kind of an alternative view. Would it be that there's just kind of like a screen up there? And so what, like how far up is it before there's something? And then how is it projected back to us is the first question.
If you want to try to define it, put a visual to it, imagine kind of like a shallow sports stadium. So it's not like, from what I can tell anyway, it's not like a snow globe where it's this high arcing, spherical barrier up above. It seems very, very shallow. And by that, I mean the width of this thing's got to be 20,000+ miles wide, but the height may only be 3,000-4,000 miles high, which is pretty thin by comparison. Again, you know, like a shallow sports stadium. Now, what it's made out of? Boy, just take your pick on that one. I mean, it could be anything. What we know, what we can tell is it seems impenetrable, but it is, it could be a heavy element. It could be a heavy water. It could be a frequency. It could be electromagnetic. What it seems to, what it warrants, though, is that mankind, at least our civilization, ever since they figured it out in 1956, have been trying to punch a hole through it. Starting with atomic weapons in 1958, which ran for 4 years, the Soviet Union and the Americans, remember, this was when nuclear weapons were not cheap. Mm-hmm. And they were throwing some big stuff up there, and they did this for 4 years, finally quit on the same day. Then what do you, it seems like okay, fine, brute force doesn't do it. So what else you got? Well, we got HARP, something with frequencies. Yeah, maybe that'll do it. No, that's not doing it. What else you got? Well, you got this CERN thing. CERN seems like a pretty clever, maybe we could bypass the dome entirely, open up a gateway through it without actually going through it. That seems to be sort of the dimensions of the materials are still unknown, but it seems to be a display of some sort that the stars and the planets are no different than you would be inside a planetarium. People will come at me and say, well, I go take binoculars and I can see Jupiter, and it seems pretty real to me. I'm going, well, yeah, but if you took the same binoculars into a planetarium and you look at Jupiter in there, is Jupiter more or less real with the binoculars?
Okay, right. And so then, but if I'm in a planetarium and there is a wall, then there's something like I leave the place and I'm in somewhere else. So like what is on the other side of the dome?
Good. Getting to the meat of it. If I had to take a stab, I would say it was the opposite of this place. There's a couple schools of thought here. Some people said, that the dome, if you're going to go down the biblical path, that the dome was here to protect us. The firmament was here to protect us. Oh, by the way, I've got to throw this out, which is, if anyone hasn't looked or hasn't heard me say it on other things, you want to look at something really curious, and that is look at Wernher von Braun's headstone. Where it's, 1912 to 1977, and it's a very modest headstone. You'd think it'd be some giant statue of him pointing at the sky, but no. But underneath his birth year and his death year is just written Psalms 19:1. It's like, wow, I had to look it up. And what do you think Psalm 19:1 says? It says, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Why would the father of NASA, the father of rocket science, when you hear the rocket scientist joke, that's the guy they're talking about. Why would he be talking about the firmament from the grave? But to answer your question, what is inside or what is outside? Is the firmament around us to keep us safe from the outside? Or is it to keep us, like we're a box of kittens? Or are we like a box of scorpions that really shouldn't be allowed? I mean, how many science fiction movies do we have to see that in? Where it's like, yeah, human beings, you guys aren't going anywhere because you're just going to wreck everything from what we can tell. But I think it's an unlimited dimension. I think this world, not to steal too much from Agent Smith and The Matrix, that is based on levels of misery and suffering. I think the outside is the exact opposite of that. I think it is an unlimited dimension. If anyone has any doubt, look up the five Masonic tracing boards. I think some of the old Mason stuff knew. That's my thought.
So you get to the Truman Show and you're watching. I love the Truman Show. It's one of my favorite movies.
No, the Truman Show is brilliant.
So you're watching the Truman Show and you finally get to see that there's a guy in a control room just outside that's controlling everything, controlling the people inside of it, controlling everything. Yep. Night, day, rain, shine, he's the one controlling it.
Yep.
Is it like that? Is there God who's just right, like, he's just on the other side with a microphone controlling everything? Is he, like, what do you think? Like, what do you think?
Well, again, there's only two answers to that, which is it's either God or an advanced civilization that works for God. Because it is intelligent design, no question. You can't be an atheist and believe in this thing at the same time.
Yeah.
Because if we're in a building, well, then somebody built it, which means a creator. But is God, the end all be all God, of creation, is God, God's a busy guy, I would imagine, or woman, or whatever it is. I think there's somebody up there watching, and that kind of leads me into not to go down the road too far, but why this is coming now, why people are talking about this now, why I've done 70 interviews in the last year, why there's so many people that are going, and it's resonating with so many people, including women, and women are a tough sell, and why is that? I think it's because there's a revealment process in the works here, which is whoever built this. So, again, you can take two paths here too, which is whoever built this is either going to show up or someone's going to show up and say that they built it. And you guys probably know where I was going there. So because we're going to buy it, whoever shows up, I don't want to make fun of the religions, the big five being, Hinduism, Buddhism, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. You can believe whatever you want, but let's face it. The first God that shows up wins. Because whoever shows up, if they, make a bunch of miracles happen and do some, bunch of wonders, people are going to bite on that hook, line, and sinker. And, except for people that say, no, it's not. It's, it's the anti-version of that. So we'll have to see. But that's what it kind of feels like now, that there seems to be a revealing process, that the 100th monkey effect could be in play here. That if enough people know, and which is why I've been supporting this since the beginning, mm-hmm. which is because it's like with any experiment, including stuff that we build. If enough people, if once enough people realize it's an experiment or realize where they are, well, then a trigger is tripped, and whoever is involved has to intervene, because with the whole point of trying to simulate a globe was to hide the fence, was to keep people acting naturally. Once they stop acting naturally, well, there's no point, in continuing with the ruse. You're going to have to fess up. So that's where it seems like we're heading towards.
I got a question for you, Mark. So you're saying that if you ask the average person, like the reason why they believe the world is round is just because, I've seen a picture of it or something along those lines.
Yeah.
The same reason you told me not to believe that, when I went up in an airplane was because take a look at a picture and it's flat on my screen. So yep. I feel like it's the same logic almost being applied to me. So what should force me to look at it from a different view as opposed to just like, I feel like it's easier to disprove something by just saying a negative as opposed to giving positives. Does that make
got
sense?
Got it. The thing that we've been working on recently, we've been discovering stuff. It seems like every month. Uh-huh. And you're right. And I don't want you to. It's not that I want you to go up in a plane and take a picture and see that it's flat, because I actually believe, because the computer models that I've seen, you'd have to get up way, way higher to actually see any curvature at all. Yeah. In fact, the weather balloons at 120,000, 130,000 feet, I've been shying away now and saying, look, it doesn't prove, because I've seen both the dog cam version from London and the Felix Baumgartner footage of the Red Bull jump, which wasn't that long ago. Mm-hmm. But one shows very, very flat plane at 120,000 feet, and then Felix was at 130,000 feet and shows a severe curve, like Arizona takes up apparently the whole world.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is, the jump doesn't prove that the Earth – neither prove the Earth is flat, but what it does show is that mainstream media is pushing a severe curve model, even if at the subliminal level, meaning Felix is jumping and people look and they say they of course in the back of their heads going, oh, that curve looks a little severe, but they're not going to go any further than that. They're just going, oh, we're on a curve. But if I had to direct people to look and see what they think, how they would go about trying to look at this, I would look at not necessarily negative things, but the absence of things, which was the absence of – because that's where I tried to look. I said, uh-huh. look, if you, if you're going to want to shut this down, you're going to have to find all the stuff that shows it's a globe. And so when I saw the first, you know, the only photo, the Apollo 17 photo, and a huge absence of other photos, when I was looking for video of the Earth spinning on its axis, the only video that's ever been out there was the Galileo 1990 footage, which show the Earth, you know, rotating 24 hours from a pretty big distance. But one of the early flat Earth guys dissected that one. He goes, that's really great, but in 24 hours the clouds don't move. The weather didn't morph for whatever reason, and now even NASA is disavowing. You know, in fact, we had one of our guys pretend to be a Hollywood producer, mm-hmm. calls up the trademark office of NASA, and he says, "Hey, I'm going to try and do a movie." Blah blah blah. The guy totally bought it, and he goes, "Yeah, I'm going to need some stock footage of the Earth rotating on its axis from space." And the guy goes, and the NASA says, "No, we don't have any. We don't have any of that." It's like, what are you talking about? The thing that I mentioned in my clue, where no astronaut on any mission, Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, Space Shuttle, Soyuz, take your pick, no astronaut has ever taken a camera and an exterior shot, and did at least 180-degree pan with the camera running, let alone a 360. Mm-hmm. There's no footage of any vehicle leaving orbit or entering Earth's orbit, which you would have thought would have happened with something. And then somebody guy just found 3 weeks ago, he goes, you realize we don't even have footage of any astronaut inside an airlock when they open the door. We've assumed all these things.
But why assume flat? Why not triangular, for example, or an octagon? Why flat out of all shapes?
Oh, because of the lack of curvature. And I wasn't even a huge fan of this. I was a big fan of the Orlando Ferguson map of the 1800s, where he said it was sort of shaped like a roulette wheel, although I can't say roulette wheel anymore because all the roulette numbers add up to 666. I had no idea, so now I have to call it a hubcap. Because a lot of people got mad at me, they said, no, it's really, really flat, you know, with the exception of mountains and stuff. There's really no curvature to be measured. I was going, okay. And then as months passed, we found out, because we can test it all day long now, that side to side, you're not going to see much. But front to back, you should be able to see quite a bit. And that is, if you're looking over the edge of a ball, you're really looking over a hill. And that hill supposedly slopes down, if you believe mainstream science, at 8 inches per mile squared, which is 8 inches times every mile times itself. So if it's 2 miles, it's 2 times 2 is 4, which is times 8, which is 32 inches. 3 times 3 is 9, times 8 is 72 inches. Mm-hmm. And it just gets steeper and steeper. It's not just 8 inches per mile, because that would just be a slope, like, you know, like a board downstairs. So we started looking at long distances with this, and once we started looking at things like, again, the Chicago skyline or the Toronto skyline or the Hawaiian Islands, we're seeing distances way farther than we should be able to. The Chicago skyline time-lapse footage, which was brilliant, and that's only a couple months old, where it's from beach level, and you're looking across at about 52, 54 miles, which should be 1,600, 1,700 feet below the curvature, which means on the other side of the hill. Mm-hmm. But there are the buildings. It's time lapse. You know, there's the weather going by, the sun going down, night's coming up. The buildings, you know, there's not a superior mirage. You know, mirages don't last through weather and temperature changes in perfect clarity. We were lucky to get that. And then all the subject matter experts that kept coming forward. I've interviewed like 13 so far from all branches of the military and the professional sectors, and they all say the same thing. It's like, yeah, we've all heard of the curvature, but we don't actually factor it into anything we do. Mm-hmm. The Navy guy, the very first guy that came to me, he goes, look, I'm shooting a 2-inch beam radar at 60 miles. He goes, that's a couple thousand feet below the curvature. He goes, that's ship to ship. He goes, unless that ship happens to be 2,000 feet high, we shouldn't be able to paint a target. He goes, we're not bouncing off the atmosphere to hit this thing. He goes, it's beam radar. He goes, it's not possible. He goes, on top of that, he goes, we're not using the Coriolis effect. We're not factoring in the Earth's spin into any firing solution. And all the military guys said the same thing. The tank gunner, the artillery guy, the submarine guy that's shooting missiles and torpedoes. And the missile guy there, and the United States Marine Corps sniper. He goes, the sniper guy, you know, even the mainstream media will say, oh, yeah, we factor in the spin of the earth into our shots. Sniper guy's going, what are you talking about? He goes, I taught sniper school for 3 years. It's not even in the manual. He goes, to answer your question, mm-hmm. why is it flat? It's flat because nobody can find the curve. So now is it flat and round like a dinner plate? Well, it seems like it is. You know, if Antarctica is not what it is now, it could be flat and shaped like something else, like a big square, which is kind of what some of the biblical people have been saying anyway. That the water part of it is like a puddle, but there has to have boundaries, and that the boundaries are shaped like a square. But yeah, so what we're looking at is some sort of flat, standard shape.
Okay.
So the kind of thing, this is Dave, the thing that works kind of backwards for me for this is that for the majority of humans' life, it was thought, like as far as the time of the age of the Earth, it was thought that the Earth is flat. But then the reason that it was determined that it wasn't flat is because as people started traveling and going one direction, they found that if they went the other direction, they could get there quicker, and they started making their maps. Rather than their square, first they had to roll it and make a cylinder. They're like, well, this is true. And then they went the other way, north and south, and then they folded it over again. And like, okay, well, this is how it works. Not based on pictures that they saw or going high enough, just because that was the best way for them to do trading routes and stuff. And then also based on the fact that they were doing mathematics on how the stars were going around and coming around at an exactly predictable rate, which I know that part would be explained by a screen. But but as far as gravity works, like there's no other possible way to explain the acceleration or deceleration of gravity when you go in a certain direction, like not going just like up and down, but going at angles, unless you take into account the curvature. Like physics just would break if you didn't do that.
Well, again, unless the physics were, because I don't think for a second that building the sphere was just a man-made incident. I believe that it was part of the creation process. I believe it was part of the natural process. And that was eventually, because think of what's happened in the last five. We only really got interesting in the last 500 years. If you introduce, from a creation standpoint, let's say the man in the moon from the Truman Show, if you introduce the sphere idea and, you know, kind of help them out with the physics to back it up, because remember, physics can be written to do just about anything. If you introduce that, then what does that buy you? It buys you time more than anything. And that is the human race buys you, in this case, 500 years. I think we were supposed to figure this out eventually, that we were supposed to figure out the riddle, like the physics from back then were just this big bundle of knots that we were going to be able to untie. And that we looked like we were getting really, really close. Unfortunately, the United States and the Soviet Union governments figured it out first, and they decided to keep a lid on it. As far as your physics, as you mentioned, let's throw in the because I love this. I was one of the guys on YouTube. It was Vsauce, one of the nationally, academic guys.
Classic Vsauce.
Vsauce.
I watch his videos.
Okay, so Vsauce actually did a video on this a couple of years ago. It's got like 8 million hits. And it was interesting because he was talking about like the sticks and shadows argument, which is, if you use sticks and shadows in different places, you can kind of track the sun and you can prove that it's X number of miles away and everything works out great.
Yeah.
But then he says in the video, and you ought to listen to it to get a chance, because we chopped it up, where he goes, now it also works if the sun happens to be 3,000 miles away, and if it's only 30 to 40 miles across, but then it's like, well, that's just ridiculous, though. And it's like, wait, you mean more ridiculous than have it be hundreds of thousands of miles across and, 92 million miles away? That, so it can work both ways, but there was no way, you can do all the math you want, but until you get up and see it for yourself, until you can get up there and figure it out, what do you really know? Let me throw out one more at you, which is the crust of the Earth. I'm going to beat science to death with this one until they, submit.
Yeah.
Which is, okay, the science, science has these great cross sections of the Earth. And we all know them. We see them: red band, orange band, yellow band, white band, white milky center. And I'm going, oh, that's great. So you've sent a probe down. It's 4,000 miles to the center of the Earth, if you believe that. And it's like, well, you sent a probe down that far. Well, no. Let's see, how far did you send it? 2,000 miles? 1,000 miles? 110? Deepest hole ever drilled is 8 miles. Mm-hmm. So, and they come back and I go, so what's this picture you're showing of us with this, all the cores and the bands of the Earth? And by the way, you've also done this on every other planet as well. And, you know, even planets that are outside of this solar system. And they said, oh, we took seismic waves. We basically knocked on it real hard and we kind of figured out what was going down there. I was going, well, that's kind of like knocking on the first coconut. You can knock on it all you want, but what do you really know until you get in there? And then the reason why they did it, my argument to them is, you don't know, but yet you push in the classroom. And I know they put disclaimers on there, but they're really quiet disclaimers. It's like, well, we extrapolate. We kind of speculate on what's going on based on volcanic this and volcanic that. But why don't you put a globe model in the textbooks with a cross section of it that has a big question mark in the inside? And that's because science won't do that. They are going to put in whatever, because they don't like people asking questions. They hate the repeated questions. And that's the same thing that applies here. If you're just going to make up stuff about the depth of the Earth and what's underneath this, why wouldn't you make up stuff about just about anything?
Yeah. One thing you said a couple minutes ago was that physics basically can be made to say whatever you want it to say.
Yes.
And so it seems like almost you're saying that there is nothing that is real that we've been taught. Is math real? Is 1 + 1 actually 2? Where do we get from what we've been taught? How do you decide what you've been taught that is true and what you've been taught that is not true? Is it all a lie? Where did it, like, yeah, I'm just having a hard time figuring out where, how it's possible for us to be lied, like, all of us to be so lied to and so fooled with nobody that we know who's actually in on it.
And you're right, it's a tricky proposition, because, look, I'm a huge science fan. I'm a big nerd, right? I was in the tech sector for years. I owned a comic book shop. I was a chemist. I made had an illegal fireworks company briefly.
Good for you.
Thank you. I was a pretty big nerd. Uh-huh. But and science has been good to me over the years. But they, what I've noticed about them is they tend to go too far. Now, I'm not saying they lie about absolutely everything. George Carlin will say that don't trust anything the government tells you.
Right.
Science has made some wonderful things over the years, no question. But what they don't seem to have is the moral, ethical, whatever you want to call it, the ethical compass to know when to stop. And they're also very, very protective of their own interests. Again, going back to the Indiana Jones thing, now, if an artifact is found, and I don't care what it is. You want to call it a magic wand, a cape, a ring of power? You're never going to see it, because they don't want it. If science can't repeat it, you know, I call science really magic without the mystery. If they can't repeat it or explain it well enough to where the public buys it, they're not going to show it to you. When it comes to, yeah, the created light bulbs works great. Well, I couldn't do without them. The internal combustion engine, there's some side effects there. Air conditioning, but they tend to go too far, and they don't. You probably remember the old atomic weapons test when Oppenheimer, some of the physicists were joking, where one of the guys' math was wrong, but he put it out there and he goes, you know, if we do this, there's a chance we could ignite the atmosphere and just burn everyone alive. And they said, well, who's going to yell at us? And they pulled the switch anyway. So they have turned themselves into, I'm not going to say a religion, because, you know, that's not necessarily what they are, but they take liberties like religions do, right, in some cases. Do they lie about everything? No, of course they don't lie about everything. But would they lie to protect their own interests? Yes, they would.
Sure.
And I just don't – I think in this case it was fluent – and I was the first one to say this, which was, look, if I was in the 1950s and I – this would have been a short board meeting, which is you're back then and it's like, you know what? We just found the edge of the world. And turns out it's also simultaneously the handprint of God, which gives every religion in the world their mystical artifact that they've been looking for thousands of years, and could send science back into the Dark Ages. should we tell the population? And everyone in the boardroom's going, you out of your mind? We can't tell anybody this. Not until we figure out how we're going to release it ourselves. So that's what I think they've been working up to. I don't think it's an all-out hidden lie where it was going to be hidden forever. I think they knew full well, like hiding something from your roommates in your apartment. You're never going to be able to hide it forever. You can shift it around here and there, but sooner or later, the population is going to find out. And that's where I think we are now. The detection capability between social media, high-speed internet, way better cameras, way better HD cameras, has changed all that. I mean, YouTube is the new television. And there's a lot of unemployed people out there. So it's getting around really quick. And it's again, I didn't think it would resonate. I thought I was missing something when I put these things out there. I really thought a scientist would come in and say, look, you're wrong because of this, this, and this. And even Neil deGrasse Tyson, when he went on television, you guys probably caught that. He didn't bring his A game, and he could have. I wouldn't have done what he did. I would have done different things, and he didn't. Like, almost like they're even faking the resistance to this. Mm-hmm. They're setting this up for something else. He could have come out and instead of doing a 7-minute speech where the audience was lost in the first 90 seconds, he could have shown a couple of no graphics, no pictures, no movies. Are you kidding me? Drop the mic. That's it. That's all you're going to do. It was showmanship. That's sure. all it was. So. Sure. Anyway, sorry.
So going back to the Truman Show, we get to the climax of the Truman Show when Truman figures it out. Yep. And he gets on his boat. He conquers his fear. He goes – he sails and he hits the wall and he's like, this is it. And he has to decide, am I going to go on the other side of the wall or not? What is stopping you as somebody who believes that the Earth is flat and that we're in an enclosed from getting on a boat, going to the end and finding the enclosed dome?
For one, it's sealed off tighter than a drum. You can't. Can you go down to Antarctica? Yes, said this in one of the first clues, which is if you want to go down to Antarctica and have pictures taken with penguins, you can spend 10, 15 grand and go down there. It's going to be cold and miserable. But I don't think for a second, let me use, and I don't know how well-versed you guys are in certain books, but the Book of Enoch and the Book of Jasher. The interesting thing about the Book of Jasher, the end of the very last verse of chapter 3, which was Enoch leaving, basically, where they couldn't follow him because he kept walking through all this ice and snow and more ice and more snow. It took Admiral Byrd, Richard Byrd, it took him almost 30 years to find the edge. And that was – he was flying his own set of planes, and he had the help of the Soviet Union. And he was down there for 30 years just flying and flying and refueling stations and flying and flying. Whatever – it's probably the edge of this thing from a land standpoint is probably way further than most people have really given thought to.
Right, but what about east and west? Like the Antarctica is obviously frozen. That's cold. You don't want to go down there, but you could go on – either direction and you would find the same thing since it's a dome, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean in this model, every direction, no matter where you go, eventually you're going to hit the edge of the dinner plate, which is Antarctica. It's the only continent in this map that is not as advertised, meaning we all see Antarctica as 13 million square miles, a continent, a little bit bigger than Australia.
Right.
But in the flat earth model, that continent doesn't exist like you think it does.
So,
it is,
to that point, can you explain your map just a little bit more? Like, we were talking about earlier with the plane. Like, you go to.
Oh yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
So how do we go? How do we get to Asia to California, which is easier than going the other way? Like, what does your map look like? Is it the same as we think of it, as we think of a globe, or what does it look like?
No. I'm sorry. I probably should have prefaced with that. If you want to look at it, there's a couple different ways you can look at it. If you're looking up online, the wiki projection is called the Azimuthal Equidistant. That Azimuthal Equidistant, EQI distant.
And you guys think that science is too confusing. Just simplify the term there.
Yeah, that's their term. It's their projection, and of course it's weird because it's that projection. And I kind of stumbled across this because I was looking for the flat Earth map, and I ran into this list of wiki map projections. And this isn't even officially the AE map, what I like to call it, is not even the flat Earth map. It's not associated with the flat Earth, but it is associated with other things. One, it's part of the United States Geological Survey, the USGS. It's part of their catalog. It was created by a Persian scientist 1,000 years ago. His name was Al-Biruni, who happens to have a moon crater named after him. NASA named a moon crater after him. I have no idea why. And it's also the UN flag. If people really want the simple version of it, just look up the UN flag. There it is. That's the AE map. Now, for whatever reason, they're not cross-referenced to the Flat Earth map from the Flat Earth Society. The UN flag is very, very curious also because it is identical to the Flat Earth map. But there's one thing missing on this map, and that's Antarctica. Why Antarctica is not on this map, I have no idea. There are other projections you could do to simulate what you want to do and include Antarctica, but Antarctica as a continent is nowhere to be seen, nor is it even mentioned when you're looking up the United Nations flag. They don't address it. Instead of Antarctica, what they do have on the outside, though, is a set of Greco-Roman wreaths, you know, big ones, going around the outside, these jagged, spiky things. And they never seem to address it, but that's what it looks like. So you basically take the globe and you take your hand on the North Pole and you flatten it, and then you kind of cut around it, make sure everything kind of expands out to be like a circle. So you would be if you took the globe and try to fit it onto a dinner plate, that's what it would look like.
Could it be just because the UN wants every country to be represented, or is it because? Like, because if you made a circular, like a globe, like normal, it wouldn't show every country on the map. So it would be unfair to certain countries to not have their countries shown.
But you could do something like, and I will, if you guys are here, and hopefully you can look in chat. And give me one second.
Here we go.
I will find that somebody actually sent this to me. Because they said, you can't do it without doing it like that. And I said, really? You can't do it without doing that?
Are you going to put a split globe maybe? Is that
the no, idea? No. You could do – that's what I thought initially you could do was a split globe, right? And somebody said, no. He goes, they've already done it before. They did it in the 1960s. I go, really? I go, show me. And they showed me this.
Oh.
And what that is, you're never going to believe what that is. So that shows exactly what we thought it would. Basically, it's the Mercator map squished into a sphere. Pretty elegant, actually. And it's got the wreaths around it, right? They obviously stole from the UN when they made this map. You know what that logo's from?
Hit me.
Star Trek, the original series, the mirror universe where there was an evil Kirk and an evil Spock. That was their insignia.
Huh.
go figure. I was going, so there you have it. There you can fit the – in fact, it was done 50 years ago. You can fit the entire world, including Antarctica, onto a spherical map. And if you want to, you could squeeze it. Of course, you could take the sword out of that. But you could squeeze that onto a flag very, very easily. And they didn't do it. It was almost like they wanted to – even though Antarctica, again, a big place and don't want to do any forward thinking. Fine. Nobody owned it back then. But you think nobody's going to own it ever? It was kind of like they were just removing it from people's thought processes. Is like, well, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Therefore, if Antarctica isn't on any UN flag, no one's ever going to bring it up. And they didn't. It never, no one's ever, if you look up the wiki stuff, no one's ever talked about it, which is very interesting.
Okay, so here's another question. Mm-hmm. I have a friend that lives in Greece, and there's been a conversation we've had where I was staring at the sun and he was staring at the moon. If the world is flat, how is he not able to see the sun? Because there's no possible way that the entire sun could be blocked by just nothingness. Like, there'd have to be some part, and then what makes the only sense is that part of the world is blocking it. Like, that's the only thing that makes time zones even make sense.
The time zone question, and that is, how can there be time zones if the sun, and that's because because of what you're thinking the sun is. You're thinking the sun is this giant omnidirectional light source. I noticed I said omnidirectional. If the sun and the moon are roughly the same size, say 30, 40 miles wide roughly, and kind of spin over the earth like a mobile over a child's crib, very similar actually to the yin-yang symbol. Take the yin-yang symbol and put that on top of the AE map, it works really, really well. Don't know where that symbol came from, but that's a whole other thing for another time. But to your question, no, it's a directional light source. I've got a 3D model myself that was given to me. There's videos out on not just a computer model, an actually 3D model that was built for me. If you turn the sun or the moon into like a spotlight, then it goes. It works really well. So where the only it illuminates what it wants, and so the sun isn't actually setting in the horizon; it's just going away. And tilting back to retain some form of its sphere shape. It's brilliant. And to your question, yeah, the moon is also a self-illuminated light source. And that has really spooked me out in the last 6 months because I didn't think it was initially. I thought, oh, okay, well, you know, it's still reflecting the sun. But there can't be, you know, how can you have crescents? How can you have the moon phases if there's no Earth between the sun and the moon? How can you have a blood moon, for example? And then somebody came up with the self-luminescent thing. He goes, you ever check the temperature of the moonlight? I go, no, why? He goes, because it's cold. I'm going, what are you talking about? And so there's people going out and doing tests. And again, you can go out and spend $15 on a little point and click, you know, infrared thermometer thing. And it's mind blowing because everyone knows if it's 100 degrees in the sun, it's 90, 80 degrees in the shade, right? But if you go out in the moonlight, let's say it's 50 degrees in the moonlight. Well, it's like 60 degrees in the moon shade. And I'm not saying that wrong. I'm saying that it's warmer in the moon shade.
But that's definitely not true because I can notice when I come out of a shade, it's hot in the sun. But when I go in, I never notice when I'm in the moon. If I close my eyes, I wouldn't be able to tell.
You may not be, but the temperature.
But I can tell with the sun, so that would make no sense if it's the same temperature difference that I can only notice it with one.
I don't know what to tell you there, man. I mean, I can show you a whole bunch of videos where people are doing it. We've seen up to 12, 13 degree swings, and it doesn't make sense because it absolutely goes against what we know in thermodynamics.
But I just looked at a test where that was opposite result. So how is your test different? Like, why would that test be more for sure than a test that I just looked at?
Show me the link to the test. Were they using digital thermometers or analog thermometers? And what were they projecting on? Because we go through videos every day, and we have yet to see somebody reverse this thing.
Well, let's go back to the idea then that what we believe is based on videos and pictures and everything like that. The same thing, I could make the exact same argument against you.
No. I mean, I've done it myself. My friends have done it myself.
But he's saying that he's experienced the same thing himself, where he's gone outside and closed his eyes in the shade too. We're going back to personal feeling again. So now, does it all come down to personal feeling in the end?
Because the thing that I've seen that with those tests is that you're exposing yourself to the temperature and then you go under the shade. So if it's cold outside, then going into a place, obviously the temperature is going to be warmer because you're no longer out in the air. So that's has nothing to do with the light. That has to do with the weather.
Yeah, but we're doing it with objects that are very, very close to each other. I mean, within 3 or 4 feet, and there's no enclosure that we're talking about. You know, we're talking about, in fact, I'll take it one step further. There's a creepy one. There was a friend of mine in England who did this test, and I was the one that suggested it. Because I thought, you know, I was thinking weird ways, which was because the thought was, okay, if it's cold, you know, if the shade is warmer and the moonlight is colder, then what happens if you take a magnifying glass to that moonlight? Mm-hmm. Does it get warmer at that point, or does it even get colder? Does it magnify the cold light? And he took copper strips that were right next to each other. One was in the shade, one was in the moonlight, and one was under a magnifying glass being held by like a jeweler's arm. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the magnified moonlight was even colder on these copper strips. It didn't make any sense. But what I'm getting at is that does that prove a flat Earth? No, it doesn't. But what it does is it really puts a wrinkle in what we have been told about the moon all these years, which is that the moon reflects the sun's light. And then
on the same point, though, because this has something to do with the same sun, how come when a ship is like coming, like you would once it gets close enough, you kind of like can see it because your vision. Yeah. But how come it doesn't just appear? Instead, it emerges like it's coming up, like you see part of it and then you see more of it and then you see all of it. How would that not? Because like you've explained how like going left and right, it's not a curve, forward and left.
The ship's going to the distance. Oh man, there are so many examples of this now. We have learned so much in the last year between refraction and the vanishing point than we ever have before. Which is you'd think depending on which videos you watch, it appears that the mass, you know, that it's going down hull first, but in effect, it's actually we've got videos where the boats are actually hovering above the water. We've got. What happens is it blurs from the bottom up. And more important than that, though, is when those ships go away out of your line of sight with binoculars, you take a better set of binoculars or a camera with a digital zoom lens, you can bring the ship back. That should not be possible. So when the ship goes away, let's say it goes out to like 10, 20 miles, right? Ship's gone. But then you take a zoom camera, voila, the ship is back, even though it's technically on the other side of the hill. And again, don't forget my friend from the Navy who said, oh yeah, we can smack them at 60 miles away. No problem. They have to paint the target.
Mark, who are these guys you keep talking about?
Which guys?
You're like, we, you know, we...
Oh, the testimony show. I'm sorry. I should probably do a shameless plug. on my YouTube channel, I have a playlist. My YouTube channel is Mark K. Sargent, although you can look up testimony shows or Strange World or whatever you want. But Mark K. Sargent, S-A-R-G-E-N-T, there's a playlist called Testimony Shows. And it's a two-hour interview or me reading a statement if they want to be anonymous, where they, you know, all these guys come on and talk about everything that's involved with their careers. Everybody, you know, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, quite a few. In fact, I've got an Army helicopter guy I'm dealing with tomorrow. Career surveyor, 32 years. That guy was really, really interesting. Corporate travel agent, industrial engineer specializing in valves and seals that says the ISS, the International Space Station, cannot exist how they say it does because his company supplies stuff to the military for submarines. And there's no way they can do what they do. You know what my most interesting one, though, I think was the career surveyor because – He was so matter of fact about it, meaning he had been a career surveyor in Indiana for 32 years, big projects, not like shooting, you know, the land at your home or you know, like doing car plants, airport runways, entire cities, right? He and his friends have been doing this for decades. And he goes, it's weird because when we start out as a junior surveyor, they all tell us the same thing and they go, treat your project like the world is completely flat and everything will be fine. And he actually asked when he was younger, you know, and he's like, whoa, don't you have to deal with the curve? And they all said the same thing. They said, don't worry about it. You don't have to worry about it. And so he treated all his projects like that. And he goes, it's really strange, though. He goes, because when you're dealing with these big projects, you know, 10, 20-mile tracts of land, you're dealing with curvature. And I think it's a perfectly flat, let's call it like a big flat cracker. He goes, my cracker has to butt up against another guy's cracker in all directions, north, south, east, and west. He goes, sooner or later, these big tracts of land have to deal with the curvature. But all the tracks that we butt, all the projects butt up against each other perfectly, like Legos. He goes, there's never a problem. He goes, not only is there never a problem, we never even discussed any a problem in those lines. You know, nobody ever came into a thing. It's like, oh, hey, my project met your project and, you know, you're 6 feet off from mine. Oh, you probably didn't take into account the curvature of the earth because that conversation never happened. He goes, the only guys that seemed to deal with it ever were the geodetic surveyors. He goes, and I don't know what the heck they're doing because all they do is believe the globe is round and that's how they try to factor their math. But he goes, in real life, it doesn't happen.
Hey, Mark, I got a question for you. So, yeah. And it's on this exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Because earlier in the show, I asked you about pilots and what they think about it. And you said earlier that pilots are too busy to notice or anything like that. But you just said tomorrow you got an Army helicopter guy coming on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of retired pilots that may not care if their job's at jeopardy because they don't have a job anymore in the industry. Sure. So why are there not literally – I mean, there have been thousands of pilots easily, I'm sure, in the nature of a flight. So why has there not been a really large amount of pilots that have been saying stuff, at least to each other, that have been like, you know what, maybe we should come out with this. And I mean, you're sure you're mentioning one guy with a helicopter, but – and I'm sure there's more why is there not literally a large mass movement?
They're starting. That's the weird part. They're starting to talk to each other because they all say that we never would have noticed it. But the second thing they say is, yeah, you know, all the instruments they use, especially the gyros that spin up on the ground and you know, they spin up on level ground and then they don't deviate and they don't adjust for the curve. Meaning, you know, when you're flying, you've got to adjust 8 inches per mile squared, which means either, for example, the nose would have to be either constantly because if it was constantly level and that gyro was the curve was dropping beneath you, you would be constantly gaining altitude. So you would either constantly be trying to force the nose down in the plane every once in a while, or you can come back and the debunkers will say, no, gravity's pulling down. I'm going, fine. Then if gravity's pulling down, you'd be constantly trying to nose it up. Don't tell me that it's perfectly balanced. And they all said the same thing. Every instrument they use treats the world like it's perfectly flat.
How many pilots are we talking about here that you've at least heard of? Because you're saying that they are coming out. So,
that I mean,
you've heard of. How many would you say in general? Just so I can get an idea.
A dozen maybe so far that have already talked about it. Which is, again, considering this topic, it wasn't even a topic a year ago.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. And they're willing to come out on and talk, you know, go on, no, not on camera, but on air.
Yeah.
And talk.
This question goes back to, I wanted to do a follow-up about light, just because this is the thing that kind of is the most confusing to me about this model. Two sure. things. One, I've never seen a case where light was ever cool. Like, let alone, like, the moonlight's cold. I've never seen any experiment that proved that, like, just on a small scale, that you can make a light that's cooled. Like, that's cool. But the other thing is, if the sun is, you know, like you said, not omnidirectional, how come that it never changes from being a circle? It's the same size no matter where it is. If it was pointing only one direction, you'd expect it to change shape as it started going away from you. It would, if it was still pointing at you with the exact same size, then you would expect it to continue to be pointing at you, not be like the single direction.
Got it. Omnidirectional. Okay. First part is, believe it or not, we can make this now. I had to learn this last year, which was as far as the light goes, as far as making cool light, look up when you get a chance something called a cool laser. I did not even know it existed. We can do this with laser technology. It is high-end stuff. It is not in the civilian market as far as I can tell. I don't think they're curing back pain with it or anything like that, but it is out there. So, and again, the technology moving forward, it sounds great. You know, the fact that, again, why we are able to detect this stuff. As far as your sun going off in the distance, there's something going on with the display of that sun that I still can't explain. There's a technology being used that I don't know. I know that we can do it in software. I know that much because we've been doing it in simulations now, you know, the circles I was in for years, for the last 12, 14 years. You know, as far as doing what you can do with light, making it appear, even though the sun might be a three-dimensional object or a two-dimensional object, where there's still argument there, how it can display a sphere as it's going away from you, as far instead of the sphere turning into elongated or a blate or whatever you want to call it.
But hasn't the moon been around for thousands of years, though, at least in general? So how come we're just arriving at this technology now, and how did they have that kind of technology so far in the past?
You mean the...
The moon, like in terms of...
Oh, the moon, moon being cool? You guys should know this by now. And that is the technologies that we've had. I mean, look at the ancient... our civilization, our unbroken records go back, what, 5,000 years?
Yeah.
But we know there's ancient civilizations that have come and gone. I mean, the vitrified glass in India, the lost city off, you know, it's sunk off of Japan. How old are the pyramids? We don't know. It seems like we go in cycles. Are we the first people to rent this apartment? Not by a long shot. Mm-hmm. Technology gets lost. But as far as who built this place and the advanced technology, boy, it could be a long... I mean, there's texts that I don't know if I believe it necessarily, but it wouldn't surprise me, that talk about there was a time when the moon wasn't there. And you know, the moon had to be brought in, and it was like, wow, that seems really hard if it's a solar system. But if it's an enclosed system, that's not hard at all. You just drop it in. Makes a more interesting evening, I'll say that.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that the coolest thing about this is that you have like kind of taken all the points and you've thought about them. I think that's like the coolest thing. And I think that for us, we were not expecting it. Like, it seems like something that you can just, like you said, you ask somebody and they just assume that it's easy to debunk, but there's just a lot of alternative views. But it's because of that, like, because there's so many alternative views, how do you explain, like, you know what Occam's razor is?
Yes.
Why would it be that rather than everything that makes sense together, the way that I like that makes sense with, like, you know, the way that explains the light, explains gravity, explains all these things, why is it that instead every single one of those things has an exception? That seems to me like that's overcomplicating it. And then you're creating, like, you're not making the world simpler. You're making it far more complicated by making yourself into the experiment of another world that still has to deal with these same questions.
Well, is it more? I mean, every system that I have looked at, when I started looking at this thing, eventually I got to where you were going, which was, all right, how was this thing built? You know, if I had to build a world, forget about hiding it. That's a whole other thing. But if I had to build this place, and, you know, again, coming from a simulation design standpoint, how would I do it? And the more I dug into it, it just seemed to be more intuitive to build it inside a circular flat system, like a terrarium. You want to combine a planetarium with a terrarium. You could, if it was big enough, you can do some wonderful, wonderful things. And you don't think of all the things you don't need anymore. You don't need we're talking from a creation standpoint. The sun can be 30 miles across instead of 100,000 miles or whatever it is, 300,000 or 800,000. I can't remember. The moon being much, much smaller. The underwater conveyor system to run the oceans in a circular pattern. I want to have some fun. Look at the weather patterns when you look at it from an AE perspective, from an azimuthal perspective, because you can do that now online with simulations. It's really, really cool. The jet streams to run the upper part. I mean, really, kind of breaks down when you're looking at it. Kind of looks a lot like building an automobile in certain ways. The cooling system, the ventilation system, the heating system underneath. I even, you know, 'cause some people gave me crap because I was saying, look, in this something like this, even the magma systems would be artificial. And they're saying, well, why wouldn't they be organic? I'm going, what, are you kidding? If you made the volcanic systems organic, you know, one super volcano, and that's it. That's the end of your terrarium. That's over. Now, as far as I'm not trying to dodge your question because I try to live one world at a time. So anyone outside of this, if you're trying to look at, you know, if you're trying to look at a world outside of a world, I try not to get too far down that because then it gets into the Russian stacking doll argument, which is there's no end to it. It's like, okay, who created – because, and by the way, that's also one of the reasons why I think nobody's ever landed down here. You know, it's like the spaceships, which I firmly believe in. I've seen them with night vision myself, why they never landed in the middle of Ohio and, you know, gotten out and shaken hands with people and said, hey, how's it going? Sign autographs, take a few pictures and leave, because it would create way too much havoc.
Wait, are you saying UFOs?
Yeah, but in a completely different context. So
continue.
UFOs that we think of now, you know, we all think, oh, Venus and Mars and Jupiter and all that other stuff. But if those planets aren't, you know, if what you see up in the sky isn't what you think, then where are these things coming from? Are they in worlds outside of our own?
Well, I think that's the general consensus, is that they're from other galaxies.
Sure, but do they have to be? You know, could it be so simple as, you know, they could be literally right next door to us. If this snow globe, if you would, lack of a better word, was next to another snow globe, then it's really, really quick. Or take another step, because, you know, some people have suggested this, and that is, what if they were trapped in here with us? What if they're just remnants of previous civilizations and there's rules? Everyone wants to look up some creepy stuff. Look up the because people say, oh, Roswell's the epitome of all UFO stuff. No, look up the 1561 Nuremberg event. That'll put your hair on end, because there were three factions there, two fighting over the city for an hour, and then a third faction shows up in a giant black angular ship, and the other two take off. Who the heck were the guys in the black ship? Which means that screams that there's a hierarchy, there's a power structure, and that there's rules, even for the people that aren't us. You know, maybe whoever has to develop on the surface has to develop naturally, and you know, not to steal from Star Trek too much, but the prime directive is in play. That, you know, you can't mess with people. If you guys remember watching the last Star Trek movie, where why they have to kept hidden from the primitives, because the second that spaceship turned on, you know, took off in the sky, they threw away all their old religious scrolls, and the Star Trek Enterprise was their new religion. It was I think we're in the same boat.
Sure. That, Mark, this is the difficult thing, because the three of us, we're Christians, and so at the end of the day, we do believe that there's a God outside of space and time that is ultimately over our creation. And so in some respects, we're on the same page there. The problem is it's almost like we have two hands, and we have the hand that is all that we know, and NASA and the government and everything that we've been taught with their videos and their pictures and their facts and their science and their math. And then on the other hand, we have you and your friends that are trying to push back against that with your photos and your videos and your science and your math and your thoughts. And so at the end of the day, we have to sit here and decide, well, who's who's right? Is it the mass population or is it the small population? And that's the tricky part, like that we're facing here.
If you, I know, and I completely agree. Like, I was raised born again Christian, and I went to vacation Bible school and youth group and everything you can think of. And if you want, I mean, I can throw out a little chapter and verse for you. But the guy that really, really did a number was a guy named Rob Skiba, S-K-I-B-A, and his website. And he was one of my first the guys that I hit hard with this thing. His website is called testingtheglobe.com. And he goes through literally, I think in the King James, was every chapter and verse he could think of. And I don't want to quote too many things, but the two that really, really stuck out to me, forget about the revelations, you know, the four corners of the earth and the angels holding back the winds, but Joshua asking God to hold the sun and the moon, I'm sorry, the sun and the sky for an extra day so he could slay more enemies. That was a great one for me because it's like, well, you know, in a solar system model, that's a lot of work. Plus, you got to stop the Earth spinning. That's not a small task. I know God is divine, but it's like, wouldn't it be a lot easier if the place was just enclosed? It's like, oh, you want the sun in the sky for, you know, another day? It'll just hit pause.
I don't know if necessarily God's trying to take the easy way out here, though. Like, I don't like I'm one's not saying, easier than the other.
I'm not saying that either, but I'm saying that no, I'm saying that God is perfect and has divine tools, but God is also very, very efficient. God's not going to waste anything. One more before – let me – I'll get back in a second. But one more was when I put that in the clues, was the Tower of Babel scenario, which was – and I didn't mention it by name in the clues. I was hoping everyone would get it, which was Tower of Babel never made any sense to me as a child because where were they going with that thing? If the Earth is spinning around 1,000 miles an hour and spinning around the sun at 60,000 miles an hour, where is that tower going? It's not going anywhere because it's not meeting up with anything. But – if it's, you know, if it's an enclosed system, they know exactly where they're going. They figured out the borders of heaven, and they tried to, you know, go up against it, which is why God said, it's like, you know what? They're going to make it. We can't allow that to happen. Let's go down there and mess this thing up.
I mean, where were child sacrifices going, though? Because sometimes, I mean, those weren't going anywhere. I mean, I don't think they were doing the right thing on there either. So sometimes people back in the day got things wrong, too. So
yeah.
I don't know if that necessarily
says there's,
that I got it wrong.
I got you.
Yeah.
When it comes to, I'm not saying that God would take the easy way out.
Yeah.
I'm saying that God would use tools that would, he wouldn't waste anything. Meaning, for example, people say, well, isn't there space outside of this? I'm just going, why would there have to be space? If we believe there's space, if you're faking space, then there wouldn't have to be space. There's probably mm-hmm. something else. You know, look up the picture, the one of the most wonderful, beautiful carvings I ever saw was the Flammarion, F-L-A-M-M-I-R-O-N, Flammarion,
yeah.
where the story goes that the Catholic Church knew, you know, had advanced maps and sent monks out to the corners of the earth, and one of them actually found a gap in the barrier and looked beyond it and saw all these wonderful things that were reminiscent of Ezekiel and... Anyway, again, I do believe that it is divine, and I believe this concept has brought a lot of people back to spirituality. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why I've been promoting it so hard.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just hard because, like, there's to me as I've you know done very not nearly as much research as you have in this regard, but as I've looked at. The galaxies and the stars and the moon and the sun, like all of the stars and the moon and the sun and all of creation declares the glory of God. And I truly believe that as I look at the science that our scientists from just across the river have given to us about what is out there and what is beyond, it nothing has made me fall more in love with God than looking at his creation. And sure. I just have a difficult time believing that I'm going to limit God to a screen. Like, I just have a hard time with that. Like, to me, it's so much bigger like, there's just so much vastness there that...
No, I hear you. Don't think of it, though, like... Oh, which one should I use? God made the heavens and the earth and the sun and the moon and the stars, but it was science that gave the dimensions. You know, science was the one that says that they were this far away and they were this big. In fact, I won't be able to quote the chapter and verse without looking it up, but what was that one where it was said that, who were you, you know, when I, you know, where were you or who were you when I laid, you know, when I laid down the, you know, the dimensions of the earth and, you know, who, where were you? You know, nobody knows but me, someone along those lines. It's not that I'm not taking away the stars or the sun or the moon. I am saying that they're yours and yours alone. They were meant for, you know, for us. That they were met, makes it much more intimate. I'm not saying the stars. I mean, there's several people, including Rob Skiba, that said the stars aren't actually just when I say a display system, I'm being pretty open ended about this. Meaning, when Rob Skiba says, you know what, they could be the heavenly luminaries, and they could be angels marching around in the sky, why not, right? I mean, you know, who am I to say that they aren't? But if they are, that makes the whole process way more intimate and way closer and way more, in my opinion, more elegant. Look at the line from Revelations where the stars fell from the sky like figs from a tree. Mm. How the heck does that happen when they're millions of light years away? It doesn't. But if they're very, very close, and, you know, maybe they aren't, you know, maybe they aren't stars falling from the heavens. Maybe they're the angels coming down. You know, as part of the last days. I'm probably not doing it justice. I can't compare, you know, myself to other people that are way better at this than I am. But I firmly believe that it doesn't. I know. Look, for you, if you're open minded enough to you know, think of the galaxies being so far away and that it's this God's massive creation, great. It probably resonates with you more than others. But the people that I've talked to so far have found a real peace with this because it's like, look, we're in a place that was built by God and it's not moving, it's not spinning. And it's all here, was all here built for us, which is why I dedicated Clue 8 when I was doing the Flat Earth Clues to that, because people were getting depressed. They were saying, look, you know, I'm feeling claustrophobic a little bit. And then I put it out. I was going, look, it was built. The whole thing was built for us. And how wonderful is that? And that's when, you know, people start clicking in and going, yep. Now we're seeing it. And the Christian community, the ones I've talked to so far, they've embraced it way more than – I mean, all religions have embraced it to a certain degree. Not Buddhism so much. That's a whole other thing. But Christians, they've really been on it.
I think that we're going to start to, just based on time, start to wrap this up. And I think that there's like just so many more factors of things that I still want to ask. But I think that what this is the most important thing is it encourages people. I think that for both of our sakes, we would want whoever's listening to start looking this stuff up, because it's good to either find out why you're wrong or find out why you're right.
Don't take my word.
Right, but I would encourage, I think that you would encourage this too, to not do it with a bias, because the most the worst thing you can do is to take a stance and then start confirming it. So I know that I personally will be looking at kind of some of the stuff I've assumed and just try and have the mindset of not what I expect and see what happens. But thank you so much for answering our questions. But I think I just want to have you, because I'm dying to ask you more questions about like asteroids and hitting the earth and all the elements and stuff. But there's so many more questions I want to ask, but I know that it could go on forever. So thank you so much for your patience with us.
Awesome. Pleasure. All right. But, thank you. Guys.
Well, where can we send people to find out more? Because I know that people are asking those questions that we haven't asked yet. So is there a place that people can go to kind of keep reaching out and keep questioning you and stuff?
My stuff, the easiest way to find my stuff is to just type in either any search engine or on YouTube, type in Flat Earth Clues. If you want to look up everybody else's work that's out there, and there is a lot of work out there, just type in Flat Earth into YouTube and you will find just a wall of information. It's just huge now. It's now, I think, we broke 6 million just a couple of days ago.
Nice.
6 million relevant videos, which is it's nuts how much it's gone out. The website is enclosedworld.com. You'll see all my stuff there. And there's some apps. You know, I'm not name by name, but you it's not hard to find my stuff.
All right, great.
That's awesome, man. Thank you so much. And man, actually, Steve's got a question.
I just got one more question for you, Mark.
I was really excited.
Just one more.
All right, what?
B.O.B. fan, yes or no?
B.O.B. was an interesting take because he was the first. I mean, guy was nominated for a Grammy.
Yep.
But I didn't know him. I didn't know any of his music. The Flatline music video he made was very, very interesting. The fact that Neil deGrasse Tyson responded to it was very interesting. It's
a lot of exposure.
It reached 100% saturation.
Yeah.
At that point in mainstream media, everybody from Time magazine to I had a friend call me who was reading on her phone NPR, and she called me up and said, "She goes, you're never gonna guess what I'm reading." She goes, "Is it?" Because why is a physicist doing a rap battle with a rapper? And I go. I go, you don't want to know. And but I'm a fan of his song. I wasn't a big follower of his work, but he's actually going on tour. So if he comes to Seattle, if he actually asks me to come down, I will go sing.
Hey, there you go.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much again for talking to us, and we hopefully will have more people coming your way with questions, and we hope that people will really just start thinking about this. It's something that I think people take for granted. I know. I've taken it for granted. Mm-hmm. So it's just such an. I think people will get smarter. In one way or another, just looking into this. So thank you so much.
Right on. Hey, you guys have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, buddy. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Mark Sargent with Flat Earth. Man, what do you make of it?
That was a treat.
That was my favorite thing that could have possibly happened. I thought that we were going to just be able to debunk him, but he literally had thought about every question.
Here's the thing. Mark Sargent is the very definition of the Star Time podcast, because Mark Sargent is a skeptic in the biggest sense. But yeah, the exact opposite. He looks at what everybody believes to be true and says, no. I refuse to just believe it because everybody says so, and because we've been taught it for the beginning of our life. And so Mark Sargent is the definition of the Star Time podcast in the sense that he's the ultimate skeptic, and we're skeptical of his own skepticism.
And we were throwing question after question after question at him, and he was responding pretty well too. So he held his ground pretty dang good, I would say.
The fact that I have to go look up something to make sure that what he's saying is true is good to me. Like, he's not just making up stuff. Like, he's giving me things that I need to go now look to see myself, like referencing other people's work, which I think is really cool.
I'm just hoping I see him up there with B.O.B. on stage. That's all I'm saying.
Who believe that airplanes? Isn't that funny, though, that B.O.B.'s first hit was about airplanes in the night sky, shooting stars?
I have a question. Do you guys, was there anything in that he said or made a point that, at least made you go, oh, huh, that's actually a pretty good, that makes sense? Because I know there's a lot of things that I thought there could not even possibly be another explanation.
I looked up the map. And it's actually brilliant. To me, the whole argument about the planes and that it's easier, to go from Asia to California than back. I'm like, how is he going to explain that? To just smush it down. To just smush it down. That's brilliant. That's amazing. I have a hard time with the fact that he says that... What is it? The Antarctica basically circles everything.
Encompasses everything.
I don't understand that completely, but that's neither here nor there. Clearly, you have to go into the flat Earth theory with a little bit of open mindedness into that. I just still have a hard time. Truman went for it. That's what makes that's the whole end of the Truman Show. Is he gets in the boat and he hits the end. No flat Earth person has ever gotten in a boat and just gone for it.
That's how we get about.
But what are they basing the Antarctica circle around? You know what I'm saying? He says Antarctica is all the way around. So why is it that? How do they know that unless they've actually gone in and tried to do it?
Hey, maybe a part two in data.
Maybe
where they're answering some questions.
Because listen, we'll be asking questions. I'll be thinking about this for hours to come. And I'm sure we're going to go out and eat dinner and think about that.
Next time you get on a plane, I can't wait to look out my window.
Steve, I want to... And Brian answered his. What was your... Is there anything he said that you're like, oh, that's actually pretty
good? Yeah, for me, legitimately, next time I got on a plane, I'm going to take a picture and I'm going to get on my computer and test out.
So that's the one that you thought...
Actually, I know it's kind of simple, but, it's something you see every time.
But here's... just going back to... I didn't want to get into this whole thing with him, but any three-dimensional thing that you take a picture... the globe is three-dimensional, like the way that we think of it. It's a three-dimensional globe.
Mm-hmm.
And so for you to take a picture of a three-dimensional thing, it makes it two-dimensional, and so you're not going to be... It's never going to look the same.
But if you hold a ruler up to a picture of a globe, it won't look flat.
Well, that argument wasn't the depth of the object. Yeah, it was exactly. The curve. Like, that's kind of an isolated part of this argument. But the thing that he said that I really need to look up, the thing that I couldn't argue against it because my mind is just purely just assumption and experience, and it just doesn't make any sense, is the fact that he said that you could see something that should be hidden by the curvature of the Earth that goes further out, like they've taken pictures. I need to see what that is, because that would be a very confusing thing.
And that's, like, that's at the crux of the flat Earth theory, is because that's an obvious one, like, as we see. So that's at the crux of it, and I still don't fully, because I've looked into it a little bit, I still don't fully get it.
Because I've seen the thing with that is that the way that life reflects, even with gravity, like, gravity obviously affects the light. I've heard the way that I was always taught is that it bends, and so, like, you're able to see around a curve with light.
I would just assume that's more of a problem of you can't see that far. So if you take a lens that can zoom in further, the Earth hasn't curved enough for the boat to be gone. That's just more of, I would assume that your vision can't get to that point. So you take a lens, you can digitally zoom in further, you'll see it. But I think eventually, I would assume if you wait long enough, it will go beneath that curve and that you could get to a point where maybe the lens couldn't reach. I mean, we can't obviously, there's no way to defend ourselves now. But
I meant with what he said, like you'd be on a building looking out and they took pictures of things from the building that were supposedly should be.
Oh, yeah, that's
right.
Yeah,
I remember that. I just need to look at that. But the other thing that's interesting about that point is that, like, he said that all these people don't take that into account, but it's just, I don't even understand how you would, because the whole thing is that gravity, like, let's say that you were launching a rocket.
Yeah.
If you did compensate for that, then you would miss, because the whole thing is that gravity pulls it down at equal measure, so you're always going to be pulled down.
So you think your average rocket guy would be messing up a lot if it wasn't true?
If he if you were trying to shoot something like on a short range, if you're shooting something that's on a curve, you would have to account for it. But when you're going long range, like the whole point of it, I don't know. But
anyway,
there's a lot of questions we need to ask. The other thing that I wanted to ask him is, how come when you climb higher, you can see further? Because it seems like if it's a curve, when you climb higher, you can see further over the curve. But if you have a flat Earth, it would make no sense why you'd see further. But there's so many questions.
Yeah.
Too many.
We got to keep looking it up.
Speaking of questions, we've got answers tomorrow on Star Time News.
Wait, do we?
Not of anything about flat Earth, but we do have stories about the paranormal.
We'll continue to keep you guys updated about flat Earth. We'll keep that in the news cycle.
Conspiracies are fun.
It's just because... that you put your mind, you only use it where you need it. And so there's a lot of areas in our
Dave,
lives.
That's it.
Wait for it. There's a lot of places.
Obviously not this sentence.
You guys just need to listen up. Anywhere that the reason that our brain comes up with assumptions is so that we can focus our attention on things that we think we need to think about. And so one of the things that I never thought I need to think about is something like, is the Earth flat? And so I just, it's easier to not think about that. But now that my brain's thinking about it, it's like making accessing a part of my brain that I've never even had to use before.
You should think about that a little bit more.
Just think about it.
Very interesting.
Just think about it.
Hey, from all of us, from Brooklyn, New York, all of us. This was the Star Time Podcast.
Give me a break of that.
Dear John, I hope you liked it.
My question is, if an alien eats a pretzel and they fly to space, does it become a spacel? Why did the two aliens go to the wedding? Because the reception was great. I told it wrong. Two aliens with antennas went to a wedding. They said, man, this wedding stinks, but the reception is great.
I wish that... So, a bat...
Oh my gosh!
...is using its thing, and he says, hey, Mom, when I'm using my Echo, what's it all about? She said, location, location, location.